Blog Talk Radio.
When the evil lives inside of you, many are the weak and the strong of you. But with the water, to take men down to the levee, take men down to the sea, take men down to the water. We're gonna wash out those clean. Take men down to the river, take men down to the lake. Yes, we'll all go together. We're gonna do it for the good Lord.
Thank you for joining us at the Wise Women Media, the radio show, for another installment on our Friday night program. Tonight's special guest is going to be Joy Tolles Ezell. She is a warrior environmental activist, an expert on land and water use throughout the state of Florida and beyond. And we were proud to actually do a pre-recorded interview with her last night, and I just wanted to state that we had a few technical problems, and it sounds at times when I'm talking over her and she's talking over me, but I think we had some audio problems. But I listened to the playback. The interview's great. There's so much information, and she's really an expert at everything she's telling us. So I hope you all enjoy the interview. I do have a few announcements before we get underway. I just wanted to state that was the song was Nothing But the Water by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, actually one of my favorite artists and one of my favorite songs by her. To find us online, you can check us out at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. And on that website, you can see the complete show descriptions, lists of our sponsors, our social networks, links to how to get in touch with us. If you have suggestions for upcoming guests, make sure you email me at anitastewart@gmail.com. We want to give a shout-out to Here Be Monsters, which gives us this time slot every Friday night to broadcast our show. And also I want to remind people that we are independent media, so we do not take any corporate sponsorship. So if you have some deep pockets and you'd like to help us keep the lights on and keep the cable going so we can broadcast the show every week, just hit us up on that website. There's a GoFundMe graphic and link, If you click into that, it will prompt you through leaving $5, $10, whatever you can afford to keep the show on the air. So without further ado, I'll get the interview underway. This is rather long, 1 hour and 42 minutes. If you can't listen to the whole thing, just come back to the link at another time and pick up where you left off, because the archive lasts forever. So here we go, and I hope you enjoy this, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Joy Towles Ezell, for joining us on the Wise Women Media radio show.
Well, thank you, Anita. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, and I was thinking back and trying to remember when we met, and we met, it was at a nuclear teach-in, and it was in Marion County, but it was back when they were going to build the nuclear power plant in Levy County. Am I right? I'm trying to think about
it. Gee, you know, I don't know. It was a good while back now. Seems as though I'd heard about you and had probably talked to you on the phone, and we'd probably emailed each other back and too. But I think the first time I actually saw you in person was at a meeting at somebody's home. It was near Crystal River, and it was about the Levy County nuclear plant. And that had to be around 2006 or 7?
Something like eight. That. It was pretty far back, and we won that one, which was really
we did.
I mean, we won it, but we still, you know, in that regard, I still believe we have to be really vigilant, because it could come back and bite us right
now. I don't think it's gone away yet. I just think it's cost too much money. And the only way they would build it is if they get the taxpayers to pay for it.
And there were too
completely.
Many taxpayers that were let in. We were all knowing what the deal was. They couldn't do it in secret.
And, that's right.
Yeah, they tried to do it in secret. It didn't work. And we won that one for now. But that's still
right.
On the horizon.
Oh, there's no telling what they might try. Good Lord, you can't trust them.
Well, let's get started on what was the catalyst that got you so involved in activism and the environment, and let our listeners know what
okay.
Put
you
in that.
Well, it was a series of things. I grew up here in Taylor County, Florida, on a farm near Perry, Florida, well, actually Salem, Florida, which is just a little tiny place that had a elementary school and a post office and a couple little stores. There was about maybe 300 people in the area. And grew up on a farm and ranch with my grandparents and everybody all there together. And always knew I wanted to do something with agriculture, but didn't know exactly what. So I went to school and went off to college. And then I got married and had a son. And then I went back to college. And worked my way through college. I lived in Tallahassee then for all during the 70s, and got a degree in agricultural education. Thought I wanted to be an ag teacher, but then I found out when I did my student teaching that really wasn't what I wanted to do. So I went back and changed my major to ag business and ag marketing, and eventually ended up with a master's degree, ag education and ag marketing, and entomology. And from there, I went to work for FMC Ag Chemicals, and they sent me up to Alabama, and I sold restricted-use pesticides for cotton farmers, which was quite an education. I was the first female sales rep for any ag chemical company in the Southeast. And did I get an education there? You know, the farmers, we would have grower meetings, and there would be 70 or 80 farmers there. And, of course, with me being a girl and I was young, and they would ask me trick questions to see if I knew what I was talking about. So I had to know my stuff. And I realized after a while that I was probably killing myself and killing the earth. We had put out some Furadan granules, which was Furadan is very, very toxic chemical. It was an insecticide, and we were doing a test, and some of the little purple granules had fallen on top of the ground and not gotten tills under, and there were some blackbirds out there in crows, and as they pecked at those pretty little purple granules, in a few minutes they were dying. And I went to a payphone, and this was back in 78 or 79, way back then, 79 I think it was. And I called my boss on the phone, who was in Georgia, and I said, Mr. Ham, I think there's a problem with these little purple granules. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, the blackbirds and the crows are pecking at the little granules, and they're dying in a few minutes. And he said, well, honey, don't worry about that. It'll be all right. They don't, them farmers don't care nothing about those crows and blackbirds. I said, but I do. And I said, sooner or later, somebody's going to complain about this. And I think we need to do something about it. Well, that started me asking a lot of questions about what I was doing. And it was about during that time that I read A Silent Spring by Rachel Carson. And that really, I don't know how I missed reading it during college, but I did. And it sort of made me question everything I was doing. So eventually I quit that job, and I moved back home in 1981 or 82 and went back to school and got my master's degree and went to work for Sibagaigi Ag Chemicals because they were going to let me do a program with them to use less chemicals to find out how to use less for the farmers instead of soaking the soil and the plants and everything that they could sell to them. And that really appealed to me, was thinking about maybe we could use less. And, of course, really what that they really wanted me to do was to get out there and sell. So I eventually left that job, too. I think that was in 1985 or 86, and I was home, and I came back, went back to work for the Department of Agriculture, who I had worked for in the 70s when I lived in Tallahassee, and worked for Doyle Connor for several years in marketing. And it was a great job, and it sort of led me into other jobs that came along, and I finally ended up working for Smith & Hawken for a few years, and I work now for Snap-on Tools, and I have the best job in the world. And it's like I've worked 30 states, and I travel a lot, kind of set my own schedule. But in 1981, when I came back home, which was the first time I had been living back here, you know, since I graduated from high school, the first thing that my grandmother said to me was, you know, we've got something wrong with our water. It's got buckeye in it. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, there's buckeye in the water. You can smell it. And I said, well, isn't anybody doing anything about it? And she said, well, no, you can't say anything about that. It's Procter & Gamble, and you can't say anything bad about them around here. Well, Procter & Gamble owned a paper mill, a pulp mill here in Taylor County. And come to find out about it, they had contaminated the groundwater for a large, large area. And we lived about 20 miles south of the mill. And I started asking questions, and the more questions I asked, the worse it seemed to be. And, of course, back then, in 1981 and 82, 83, it was very difficult to get answers. That was before we had email and the Internet and everything. And I went to Tallahassee to what was then called the Department of Environmental Regulation, which I ended up calling Don't Expect Results instead. And the more questions I asked them, the more they wanted me to leave. And I made a trip up to Atlanta to the EPA office up there and pretty much got the same treatment there. They really just didn't want to answer my questions, and they wanted me to sit down and shut up. And so that kind of made me mad, and I just kept on digging until I just was so exasperated. And it was like people here in Taylor County, when I tried to talk to them about it, it was like, oh, no, you can't talk about that. That's you. Don't say anything bad about Procter & Gamble. You know, that's where I work, or, you know, that's where your brother works, or that's where all your cousins work, and don't talk bad about them. And but that didn't deter me, Anita. I just kept on.
Our listeners might not know what buckeye is. What exactly is that?
It is a pulp mill, similar to a paper mill, only the pulp is much more processed and use a lot of chemicals on it. They actually use chlorine bleach. There's actually two mills out there. One uses chlorine dioxide now, and the other one uses chlorine. Now, when I first started on them, both of the mills used chlorine. So they say this is a great step in the right direction for them to use just chlorine dioxide in one mill, but that's really not that much of an improvement. What happens when you put chlorine compounds on any kind of organic matter? It creates dioxin, the same, the very same chemical that's Agent Orange, exactly the same chemical, 2,3,7,8-TCCD, and it gets into the fish, it gets into the sediments. It's discharged in the air and in the water, in the effluent, and it's contaminated the Fenn Holloway River, the entire length of it, and it's contaminating the Gulf of Mexico. Plus, through the years, while they were working out there at the mill building the settlement ponds, which were supposed to be the absolute answer to the pollution, they had several sinkholes fall in the settlement ponds. And so that effluent containing dioxins went right into the aquifer, and it still does. The mill has a landfill that they've been using since 1954, and it's basically just a sinkhole. And the more they keep pushing, they keep using tractors and pushing their trash and stuff in there, and they throw away some pretty contaminated things. They use over 1,000 toxic chemicals at the mill.
Are people still, well, two questions. Are the plants still there, and do enough people know about this and are refraining from using their drinking and tap water?
Well, it's very interesting. In 1989, we finally got the state and the health department to run tests on the water. They put down test wells all around Perry and all around the mill. And the health department sent out 267 letters warning people not to drink their water, that it was contaminated. We've sued in federal court. We've sued the EPA. I think I've sued the EPA three times now, trying to make them enforce the Clean Water Act. People here know about it, but they're afraid to say anything because that's the only job in town. The mill used to employ about 1,200 people, and now there's about 450 that work out there. They've automated everything that they could possibly automate, of course. Actually, the prison here employs more people than the pulp mill does now. But, of course, the pulp mill pays better. So people are still very afraid to get involved in any kind of activism, except I have a little core group of supporters that are tough as nails and brave and smart, and they've stuck with me all these years since we first got started as a group in 1989. So I'm really proud of them.
Pretty much the same playbook as what has been done just recently up in West Virginia. It's pretty much the same thing. You know.
It's the same thing. You'll find in all polluted communities where one company has come in, they always tell people that they come in and they colonize the area. The company sees themselves as the savior, and they come in and offer people jobs and provide people work and enough to support their families. And so people become dependent upon them. And it's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome in a way. They get to where they don't want to say anything bad about them, no matter how bad the situation is. People here know that the water is contaminated, or at least most people do. A lot of people use bottled water. They don't drink their well water or the city water. And that would be what I would tell people to do, is to not drink your tap water and don't drink the city water either. The health department told people that live 2 miles north and 2 miles south of the river within that corridor to not drink their well water, that it was most likely contaminated. Well, the city water wells are just slightly north of that 2 mile marker. And unfortunately, what's happened here is because of the sinkholes and the fact that the river itself, where they dump the effluent, contains little springs that used to be springs but are now swallow holes. They swallow the effluent down into the aquifer. And the fact that the sinkholes are out there in the settlement ponds, and the fact that their landfill is contaminating the aquifer all the time. The aquifer here is contaminated. It's been proven. Dr. Jeffrey Watts with DEP did a study and proved it, and, of course, DEP would never finalize his study so that we could use it. And he left DEP. He's the city hydrologist in Tallahassee now, super fine man. This company was Procter & Gamble, and now the worst thing that could possibly happen to this community has happened. Georgia-Pacific, the Koch brothers have come in and bought the company, bought the mill. I just can't think of anything worse that could have happened here than that. So now we have an even bigger, you might say, foe than Procter & Gamble. We have the Koch brothers.
Yeah, I just don't understand how the corporations can be allowed to do this. And then you talk to other people, at least I do, and I'll say, you know, it's like a modus operandi of, you know, we're going to pollute and poison and kill people and destroy the environment. And this is their playbook everywhere they go. And then you tell people there's a genocide occurring, an ecocide happening. And, that's a conspiracy theory. We don't want to discuss that.
Well, it's all for money is what's so sad. They don't care. When a big company comes into a community, they don't really care about what they're doing to the environment. They might act like they do, and they might say that they do, but really the only thing they're interested in is their bottom line, their profit margin. And whatever it takes to keep that profit margin up is what they will do. And that's really that's really what the story is here and in most other places. I always tell people when they're thinking about letting a big company come into a community, be careful. You don't want them coming in and monopolizing. You want to have a lot of eggs and a lot of baskets. You don't want to put all your eggs in that one basket. You want to diversify it and have several different companies that you can choose from to work at and have the variety there so that you can watch all of them and that none of them get so big that they control everything in the community. And you see that in a lot of paper mill towns in the southeast. There used to be 103 mills in the southeast that used chlorine. 103 paper and pulp mills.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's right. And the reason they're in the southeast is because people were poor and they could locate in the community and they could come in and take over. People needed the job so bad they would say, okay, come on in. We'll give up our water. You know, which is what's so bad. The mill actually pumps about 70 million gallons a day out of the aquifer, but that's got to be clean water now. They've had to close down three of their own wells because they became so contaminated they couldn't use that water anymore. So they had to use the wells further away from their own mill. It's a pretty sad situation here. I see a lot of sick people here. There's a lot of people with cancer, as you might expect, from eating dogs and contaminated fish and seafood, breathing contaminated air. The air here is the 57th worst in the nation, if you were to stack it up against other communities' air quality.
What is happening with the local, your locally elected officials up there? Are they pretty much in the
public? No, you can talk to them all day long, and it's like talking to a post. First off, they don't want to understand it. Second of all, if they do understand it, they're afraid to say anything or do anything about it. The company handpicks people to run for certain offices and make sure that they have their own people in offices here to keep things under control, under their own control. I'm like you, it's the political process is the only way we can win this, and I agree with that. And I think with the Internet, Anita, I think the Internet is really helping because it's educating people in their own homes without them having to ask questions out publicly. They can learn things that they couldn't learn any other way before.
Yeah, they can go and do the research. When they
it's an education. That's exactly right. So I try to put things in a real simple manner on the Internet so that people can understand it. that they don't have to have a, you know, a college education or a master's degree to understand what the problem is, but make it real simple for them, and that way they're not so intimidated by it. It's a complex problem, you know.
Yeah,
it started way before. I was born in 1947, and that's the very year that the state gave Procter & Gamble a state law that said that they could pollute the Thin Holloway River. They named it an industrial river in 1947.
Wow.
And I remember the day in 1954 when they contaminated the river. They were building the mill, started in 1952, and finished it in 1954, and that's when I was 7 years old. And my daddy and I were going to town one day, riding in his car, and we crossed the river this day in 1954, and there were millions of dead fish in the river. Now, up until then, that river had been clear, clean and clear, crystal clear, most of the year. In fact, there was a bottled water company. The Jackson family here operated a bottled water company up from the Thin Holloway Spring, just northeast of the mill. And the mill said they had an accidental spill of 500,000 gallons of black liquor, and it contaminated the river, killed the fish. And when my daddy saw those dead fish, ooh, he went into a tirade and said a bunch of really blue words and was cussing like nobody could, like I never heard before. He was very upset. And the river turned black with the effluent. And the next day, he and I got in the boat and went out to Rock Island, which is an island at the mouth of the Thin Holloway River, and there were just millions and millions of dead fish in the Gulf of Mexico from that supposedly accidental spill. But they had the legal right to pollute it. Now, the state rescinded that law in 1969, and when you tell people that, even when you go and talk to the legislature about it, and when you tell DEP that, it's like you're saying something that they just don't hear you. They actually did rescind the 1947 law in 1969. And in 1997, we were able to get the river reclassified from a Class 5 industrial river to a Class 3 river. And I thought, man, we got it made. Now we're going to see some improvement. Well, the DEP turned around and gave them variances so that they didn't have to meet Class 3 standards. So, in effect, it's still a Class 5, not fishable nor swimmable, and we say it's not splashable either, river. You don't want to get ammonia.
Now, are you still serving on the Soil and Water Board up there? Or
no, I served a couple of terms back in the 80s, and then I served another term back in 2000s. I don't know, 4 or something like that, but I'm not on it anymore.
And what kind of work now? They're pretty much doing the same thing that our Soil and Water Board here is doing, and I always find it kind of funny that it's the Soil and Water Conservation Board, but yet there's very little mention of water. It's really just basically the work is done for the farmers.
That's true. It's more of a soil conservation entity than it is anything else. When you wanted to talk up here with our soil and water conservation board about water conservation, it was like, ooh, we can't talk about that. even those we did, though, there were 3 of us environmentalists on it for a 4-year term, and we tried to do as good as we could possibly do then, as much as we could possibly do during that time. Myself and Rick Causey and Diane Whitfield all got elected to the, well, it was actually a 2-year time when we were all 3 on there. And so we did as much as we could do those 2 years. And then I served another 2 years after that, and then I got off of it. It was just too frustrating. I'm too old now to be frustrated.
Well, now you kind of want to do blissful things, but what do you think are the biggest issues that are facing the state now? Not just
oh my goodness!
The fertilizer use,
we've got to get a handle on that. But, I mean, that's just ridiculous. The Indian River and the St. Johns River, what a mess! All of our springs are in a mess. there's too many people to start off with. I won't go into the population thing, but there really is too many people using too many resources too fast. Not sustainable. You know, before we build another house in this state, we need to make sure we've got enough water to supply it. Before you build another factory of any kind, you need to make sure you got enough water. Before you put down another well, you need to make sure you got enough water. And our water management districts don't even know how much water there is available. They don't know. They don't have a clue. Plus, they don't know how much is being used.
Have you read a little bit about what's happening down in the Everglades as far as the fracking?
Yes. It's just ridiculous. The most environmentally sensitive state in this whole country, and they want to do the fracking thing. I think it is just stupid. It is, how could anybody be that dumb? Even if you make a lot of money, how could you be that dumb? It's just beyond me. When I first heard that they might want to come to Florida, I'm thinking, well, surely that's not going to happen because everybody knows better than that, don't they? Well, apparently money is more important to a lot of people than their future and the grandchildren's future. You know, when you don't have fresh, clean drinking water, you're in pretty darn bad shape. Ask somebody that lives here that has to buy bottled water. Ask somebody that lives here that has to take a shower in water that has a stinky pulp mill smell to it. Ask people here who have cows and horses and chickens how they think about when they open that spigot up at the barn and give their horses that they love so much, when they let them drink contaminated water, how that feels. That does not feel good. And, you know, you hate to think about it, the whole state being that way. There are some sacrifice zones. Like this area here is a sacrifice zone so that people can have disposable diapers and sanitary napkins and depends and such. And I've come to accept that this is a sacrifice zone so that people can have those products. I don't like it, and I'm not going to shut up about it. I'm not going to sit down and be quiet. I'm not going to stop trying to make them do better.
Right.
But this whole state of Florida doesn't need to be a sacrifice zone for money, for the oil companies, for Exxon, for BP, for the fracking companies, for anybody. We don't need to do that. It's just so wrong. It's so morally wrong in the first place. And it's so short-sighted. How can people be that short-sighted and not think about their children and their grandchildren and future generations after that?
I was talking to a friend just the other night about the moral compass, you know, what happened to people's moral compass. Mm-hmm. And then the big question that a lot of people have is how can the people that are, you know, the bigwigs of these companies, fully knowing what they're doing and knowing that they'll probably never be held accountable, allow this to be done when they've got grandchildren sitting at home that are going to inherit the earth like this? You know?
They don't think about it. They think they're in a bubble and they're not going to be exposed and that they're not going to be affected by it. I'm always gratified to see those CEOs out playing golf because golf courses use more chemicals per square foot than any crop, even including cotton or tobacco. And those guys are out there in their leather golf shoes, and they're soaking up those chemicals every time they take a step.
That's true.
So I think that it may sound mean to me, but in a way it's maybe that's justice.
And maybe that's just the justice that we're going to see at this point in time, and we're not going to see the rest of the karma that gets doled out later on.
Yeah. Well, the trouble with it is that those golf courses are using way too much water, and they're using way too many chemicals, and it affects other people too, not just those CEOs, but it affects anybody that is in contact with them. You know, a lot of people want to live next to a golf course, but I sure wouldn't. You know, having worked for chemical companies, I learned a whole lot. It really prepared me for when I came back home and I found out about the water problem here. But chemical knowledge that I had gained during those two jobs really helped me understand what the problem here is. So, you know, you kind of live your life and you do things and you learn along the way and you gather information as you go and it helps you to understand things. There's a lot of people here that just don't understand the situation at all, and I hate that because I really would like to tell them and maybe help them expose themselves less to the chemicals. And there are ways to do that. I mean, you don't drink the water. If you eat fish, you make sure you know where the fish came from, and you don't eat certain types of fish. I mean, don't eat Spanish mackerel. Because they're just so contaminated with mercury, you shouldn't ever eat them anymore. Don't eat catfish. They've got too much mercury in them. Eat fish like mullet up here are really good from this coast up here. And they're young fish. You catch them when they're young, and they haven't had much time to absorb a whole lot of chemicals. You need to think about things like that. I wouldn't eat the oysters from around here. No way. You just got to think about things. And you think about beef, you know, we have a few beef cows here at home, mostly descendants of my granddaddy and great-granddaddy's cracker cows, and they're kind of a family thing. But if I think about, you know, they're breathing this dirty air here. When it rains, there's probably chemicals in the rain from the air pollution. They drink the water here, and I think about, you know, we sell a few calves every year, and they go off to the feedlots and come back to people at Winn-Dixie and in restaurants, and they're getting contaminated meat.
Wow.
And, it's really something to think about. I mean, it's, you know what you're going to do.
It's so wide-reaching because it's already in our food chain. So there's...
That's right.
You know, there's no way...
And you have no control at all over what they feed beef or chickens or anything else at factory farms. We have no control over that. In fact,
right.
If we wanted to raise some organic beef, it would be almost impossible for us to do that because we can't grow the feed so that we would know that it was organically grown.
Right.
So,
we have a couple places here that sell organic beef, but the big thing about that here in this area, you know, near Brooksville, is you've got to go in with a couple other people because, you know, they sell the cow.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you have a big family, there's really no way you could use that.
And a big freezer,
Yeah, and a huge
freezer,
yeah.
And then at the same time, you've got industries down there that are polluting the air, and those pollutants are going on the grass that the cows eat. So there's only so much you can do, you know, you can be smart, and you can reduce your exposure to a lot of chemicals, and you can eat organic vegetables. You can be pretty sure, if you know the farmer, that they're not using chemicals on the vegetables. But any kind of meat and chickens are dangerous to eat because you can't control but what's in their feed.
Do you think we're past the tipping point as far as being able to go backwards and repair our environment and clean and detoxify ourselves and our meat supply? Do you think it's too late for that?
Well, I think it could be done, but it sure is going to take a big sea change in the way people live. The way we're living is not sustainable. There's going to have to be a great big change in consumption, a huge change in consumption. People are going to have to grow their own food as much as possible. You can grow a garden on just a little tiny place, and you can produce more of your own vegetables than you can probably eat. And you can share them with your friends and put them in the freezer and can them and use them for later on. But you can grow a heck of a lot of food on your own. And it's not all that hard to do. You just kind of have to read a few books and study up and then just get some experience with it. Listen to people that know how. So I think that's one thing we're going to have to do. We're going to have to drive less. we're going to have to just use fewer products. Think about all the things that we throw away. I think we're the only culture that's ever been that buys plastic bags to put stuff in that we're throwing away.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Now, you think about that, okay? But, incinerators are probably one of the worst polluters of all. And people build incinerators and gasification plants and all that thinking, oh, that's the answer, we'll just burn it. Well, think of all the water and all the resources and everything that had to go in to making all those products, the packaging, the everything that you throw away. Think about that. There's such a waste of resources when you send it to an incinerator. So I've been heavily involved in finding incinerators in Florida, including biomass gasifiers and all those kind of things, for the past, 10 or 12 years, for quite a long time now. It's a waste of our resources, and we've got to quit wasting things.
We have a crazy phenomenon here in this part of Florida where, Leon and I had moved up from Clearwater into Zephyr Hills, Dade City area after the four hurricanes,
mm-hmm.
2004 and 2005. So we moved out here after that. And what I found amazing was all these young men, they mm-hmm. would put all the garbage in those huge tin cans, garbage cans, and then they would hoop and holler and dance around those cans when they caught them on fire. And, of course, they were drinking beer the whole time they're doing it. So,
and exposing themselves to some terribly toxic chemicals.
Exactly, because it's almost all plastic that they're burning or packaging or whatever they're, whatever they're unwrapping.
Whatever's in the trash, whatever's in the garbage, yep.
Right.
I've seen people do that, too, and I'm thinking, man, if you only know what toxic chemicals are coming out in that smoke, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and it's amazing because you can drive, at dusk, anywhere through, some rural areas in Dade City, Zephyr Hills area, and everywhere in between, and you'll see fires going, and it's like, oh, my God, this stuff is being released. So on top of that, and then the controlled burns that they do regularly in the Green
mm-hmm.
Swamp, we're getting hit with a lot of air pollution here north of Tampa, quite a bit, actually.
And speaking to that, the PR guy out at the mill here once told us that all the dioxin here was from forest fires. And I said, oh, really? I said, forest fires create dioxins? He said, yes. And I said, well, I'm so glad you've admitted that. I've been wanting somebody in a position like yours to admit that for a long time. And I said, Dan, you know that the dioxin here, a little bit of it is from the forest fires, from your control burning and such. And the mill here doesn't control burn because they can't take in trees that have a little bit of soot on them. They want those nice white, bleached white product to come out of that mill, so they don't want any soot in it. It's good to know that you've admitted finally that forest fires do emit dioxins in the smoke. It's very interesting. Their dioxins come from so many different industrial processes. They come out of incinerators when they burn plastics and paper and anything like that has been chlorinated at some point in the process of making it. Paper mills emit a lot of dioxins in the air. All the incinerators do. Power plants, coal-fired power plants, thank God, don't emit too much dioxin, but they emit a lot of mercury, as you know. So all of these things that we think are, fantastic, that give us electricity, and all these biomass gasifiers now, they want to burn wood to make electricity. Well, okay, there you go. Burning wood or gasifying it makes dioxins, and they're going to go up in the air. No matter how good a filter system they say they've got, that's not the answer to that. No. Tell them, no, you don't want a biomass burner or a biomass gasifier or anything that gets rid of any kind of biomass because you're going to be creating dioxins into the air.
And what would you say would be the best way to for someone to get rid of their garbage? What happens when they take it to the landfill?
Well, first of all, we need to watch it when we go to the grocery store and not bring home that packaging home. Let's go to grocery stores where they let us take in our own bags and reuse them over and over again and not use all those plastic bags. Like, I think that the Winn-Dixie's get a premium for every bag that they give you. Do they seem like they put every article that you get in a plastic bag? Sometimes people come home with so many plastic bags, it's like more plastic bags than they brought home food. You ever thought about that? Let's think about what we buy, and then let's think about what we throw away. If we could get to where we didn't throw away much, boy, we'd be a lot better off, and the whole world would be a lot better off. The environment would be so much better off. If we could starve the incinerators down, that would be a wonderful dream of mine. If we could starve them of all their trash that they wouldn't have to burn anymore. You can compost a lot of things and make really good garden soil out of it.
Anything that's organic, I have a compost pile in the back. So anything.
There you go. There you go. I knew you would. Yes.
That's because.
We have to recycle. We have to reuse. We have to do all those R's, that whole string of R's. We have to do all those things. And we have to think about what we're doing, too. You know, I tell people, wait a minute, think about what you're doing. You're going to throw away all those, that product that you're about to throw away there because you're either tired up or it's worn out or torn up or something. That product costs a lot in water and in whatever kind of materials it took to build it, transportation, packaging, all of those things went into that product. And so let's try not to throw so much stuff away. Have you heard the story of Stuff? Have you read that or seen the little movie?
I saw the little video. It was an amazing video, and it's got such a message, and they really, you know, marketed that to people who might not necessarily have watched that normally and made people want to watch it.
I hope that your listeners, if they haven't seen the story of Stuff, just look it up, just Google it. You'll find it on the Internet. And the lady who did that has done several more very informative, very enlightening, very, very smart things since then to educate people along that same kind of line. There's a lot to learn, and there's a lot we can do. I don't think that we've exhausted all the things that we can do. I do think, however, that the environment is past that tipping point, and I do believe that we are experiencing climate change. To think of all the rain that we've had this year, and then think just a year ago, think how dry it was. All the springs in North Florida were drying up. I made a little tour around and took pictures at all of our springs, and there was hardly any water coming out of the ground last year. And this year, of course, we've got more water than we've had since 1997. I think there's more water here than we've had since 1997. There's a lot of places here that are flooded right now. And I think in Florida, I think we need every drop of rain that we can get. So I'm not going to say that it should stop raining. It can keep on raining. It could let us have a few days of respite and let us kind of get caught up a little bit and let it soak in. But we need every drop of rain we can get in Florida. You think about the Northeast, the weather they've had up there this year. My job is very, very much connected to agriculture, and they sure can't say up there in the Northeast this year that they haven't had any snow because they've had way more than they normally get. Out west in California, they're having a terrible, terrible drought. In the whole world, the weather patterns have changed, and not for the good. Not for the good, I think. I hope that we don't do like we did in 1997 after all this rain we've had. In 1997, it just stopped. And we had two or three years there of really bad drought in Florida. And I hope that doesn't happen to us. I hope we keep getting some rain along and along like we need.
I remember the drought, and I also remember it was just a couple years ago. I think it was very soon after the BP oil disaster, but it was in Afghanistan, there was a point where four-fifths of that nation, it was either Afghanistan or Pakistan, I wish I could remember which one, but four-fifths of that nation were underwater.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
You know, how could that possibly happen? I mean, there were, you know, millions. I don't know how many died, but, you know, people lost their homes. They had to.
I don't know how you can explain it except that it's climate change. It's global warming. You know, in Florida, have you seen the maps that they're coming out with now that are very much different and very much more severe, and the water levels coming up along the coastlines than the original maps? The ones that Al Gore had a few years ago were
those
sort of mild as to the ones I've been seeing lately. The water is going to be, you know, covering the Everglades completely. I had one of my friends a couple of weeks ago said, why are we spending all that money to save the Everglades when it's going to be underwater in just a few years? And I said, well, because it's our duty to save the Everglades. You know, we really should try to save the Everglades. And we really should be stopping building coal plants, and we should be tearing them down and stop and not burning any more coal. Because it's putting so much carbon in the air that it's just not, you know, I think that James Hansen might be right on that, that we are past the tipping point on that, and maybe we should have been started many, many years ago stopping coal and not burning coal. And nuclear is not the answer either. You know, every house needs solar. Every house needs a little wind turbine. Even if the power companies tell you, oh, we don't have enough wind here in Florida to make wind power, that's a lie.
It is a lie.
A few years ago, they told us there wasn't enough sun.
Right.
I was over in there was a JEA in Jacksonville, Jacksonville Electric Authority, and the Florida Municipal Power Agency, the Reedy Creek thing there in Orlando, the Disney, and the city of Tallahassee wanted to put a coal-fired power plant here in Taylor County about 2004, 2005. So we rallied up, of course, and we opposed it every way we possibly could. And I was in a meeting over at JEA in Jacksonville, and the PR woman was up there just talking away, and it came around my turn to introduce myself, and we were in this huge conference room with this long table with windows all around, and we were way up, you know, on the top floor of the building. And it was so smoggy outside, and their coal-fired power plant was not very far from there. And she was talking, you know, about how there wasn't a whole lot of sun in Florida, and I came my turn, I introduced myself, and I said, I want y'all to look out here. Look out here. I said, see that? That's pollution. That's smog from your coal-fired power plant. And she said, well, we don't have it. And I said, I'm just so proud of you folks at JEA because you've installed solar panels enough to power 26 schools in Duval County and City Hall. I think that is a wonderful thing. And she said, but we don't have enough sun here to power anything else. We've maxed out on that. And I said, ma'am, don't tell me that. You got to be kidding me. No, that's not true. I said, you just don't want to spend any more money doing it. And you know it's a good idea. And you know eventually you're going to have to, because eventually you're going to have to close that coal-fired power plant. You're not going to be able to build a nuclear plant. We're not going to let you do that. You may turn to gas, which we're not going to be real happy about either, but you're going to have to install solar. That's all. That's the only. You need to let people have solar on their homes, and maybe you could sell it to them or charge them a fee for it. We're not trying to put you out of business. We're trying to help you stay in business. But we want things to be done in a better way, a smarter way. And y'all can do that if you just try. And she just looked at me so strange. She said, oh, my. I must have exasperated her, Anita.
Yeah, she didn't know what to say. She was shocked. But that's just it. They're holding on to the rights of solar, these power companies, so they can sell the sun, the power from the sun, back to us.
I think most people wouldn't mind having solar panels on their house that were owned by a utility company. I don't think people would mind that, as long as they did it in a fair way and, you know.
Well, as long as they charge it.
We don't mind paying a little bit more for the right thing. Most of us don't. You know?
If they charged in a decent manner and didn't,
yep.
I mean, I'm paying an electric bill right now. I don't know how they can. This is supposed to be a co-op I'm in.
Uh-huh.
An energy co-op, right?
Who do you get your power from?
With Lacoochee.
I see. Uh-huh.
You know,
they buy it from the Palatka coal-fired power plant, probably.
Probably
some from the nuclear plant. You know, once it gets in those lines, you don't know where it came from.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they're, what I don't understand, this is how screwed up they are. They have budget billing, but it's only for people that pay their bills on time.
Uh-huh.
I can't figure that one out. Budget
That's
billing.
Interesting. Well, yeah, and you know, people that buy power from Florida Power, Duke Electric now, they're helping to pay for nuclear power plants that are never going to be built.
Right.
Which is totally, really hard to believe, but it's true. And our legislators keep on letting them get away with that kind of thing.
Yeah, because
and when we go to Tallahassee and stand up there and complain about it, it's like, oh, you know, when you go to the Public Service Commission to their hearings, oh, man, that is an education in itself right there. If your listeners haven't been to a Public Service Commission hearing, they should at least get on the Internet and listen to them live and pay attention to the things that are said. We don't have anybody. There's a public advocacy attorney that's supposed to be looking out for us. But the people are not very well represented at the Public Service Commission meetings.
Right.
And it takes regular people to go up there and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is crazy. How can y'all just keep on doing this to us? And it's going to take a lot of work on environmentalists and just consumers' part to make them treat us right. We haven't even begun to work on that yet. So...
Right.
But it would be a great education for your listeners to just get on the Public Service Commission website and watch some of those hearings. You'd just be amazed at what goes on. Not for the good, I must say.
Advantage of a population that isn't too educated or doesn't educate themselves. And the fact is, so many people are working two or three jobs to try to make
mm-hmm.
it. They're coming home and they're just exhausted and
they're tired.
They
want to drink a beer and watch some sitcom that takes their mind off all their problems. And you really can't blame people for feeling that way. They don't want to get involved in all these big problems that you and I and a lot of people dwell on and deal with all the time. They want some relief is what they want. And I can't blame people for feeling that way.
No, they're in survival mode.
That's right.
It's really survival mode, and a friend of mine said that to me just recently. She said, "I don't know how you do what you do and how you keep continuing it." She said, "I have all I can do to get up and get to work in the morning and get home and feed."
And I understand that. It's because you and I are so hard-headed. That's why.
We must be because. You know, Michael Franti has a phrase in one of his songs. He says, "I'd hate to be my own enemy." I'd hate to be my enemy. And
isn't that the truth?
We are
terrorists, aren't we?
we're terrorists for the environment, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah,
the local paper here, about 1991 or so, called me an armed radical environmental terrorist. And I thought that was the ultimate compliment that they can make to me. And I told them, I said, yes, I'm armed with the truth. I'm radical for Taylor County. Yes, I am. I am an environmentalist. And the only person I've terrorized so far is the PR guy at the mill. But I'm going to make him earn his keep.
So I don't know what's going to happen with the fracking, but I have a feeling down there it's going to take bodies on the line because
I think so too. I'm afraid it will. You're exactly right.
And I've already talked to my landlord, my partner, my job,
mm-hmm.
and told them that when the time comes, I will be down there.
Yep.
And I've said
that too. You know what? They wanted to frack over here in the Blackwater State Forest, over here in the Panhandle.
Uh-huh.
And people raised so much hell that I think that they backed off on that. They decided to not do that. And so they immediately looked down towards the Everglades to see if they could get away with it there. And I think that, yes, all of us are going to have to go down there, and we're going to have to stand there, and we're going to have to say, no, you can't do this. And if we get arrested, we get arrested. That's just the way it is. But I'm afraid that's what it's going to take.
I'm afraid that's what it's going to take, too. I don't think
mm-hmm.
we have a choice. The Sunnyland Trend, which is down there, it actually intersects the Everglades. I think it goes from, like, Fort Myers down to, like, the Miami area. It's like a diagonal
mm-hmm.
Sunnyland Trend where they did drill during the Second World War, but it was a horrible
mm-hmm.
quality of crude. And they, you know, probably used it for tanks or whatever, you know, and there just wasn't enough there for them to continue
mm-hmm.
drilling. So they were...
Yeah, Amoco came through here back in the 1980s, early in the 80s, and drilled all the way across the state of Florida. They started at the coast over here, right around Keaton Beach, and went east across the state and drilled the down test wells all the way across the state. And apparently they didn't find what they were looking for, because whatever they did put down a test well, they capped it off and left after a couple of years.
So it was all exploratory.
Yes, exactly. Yep. They may have found it and decided there wasn't enough. Who knows? It's one of those things where you couldn't get any information from them. You can ask all you wanted to, but you couldn't find out what you wanted to know.
And what really scares me, too, is the fact that people are buying homes and they're not buying the water rights and the mineral rights underneath their property.
I know. Isn't that amazing? You know, when you and I were growing up and we were younger, we would never have thought about buying property that you didn't have the water rights and the mineral rights to the land. No way.
But people do it all the time now. Yeah, my father warned me.
Mm-hmm.
He sat me down. I was probably in my teens, but he told me, he said, don't ever, here in Florida, he said, don't ever buy a house on the beach.
Yep.
And I said, why? And he said, because there's going to come a time when you're not going to be able to afford the insurance.
Yep.
And
he was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he very right. And then he said, and if you do buy property wherever you happen to be, better own what's underneath it. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? Of course, I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. He said, you make sure that it's on the paperwork, and that when you get the deed, it's on the deed.
Mm-hmm.
That mineral
Very good.
And water rights, you must have it.
Yep.
And I thought...
Well, and now we have to think about saltwater intrusion also.
Yeah. Tell the listeners a little bit about that, because I think a lot of people that are not in Florida would not understand what that is exactly.
Okay. Say if you own some property a mile inland from the coast, anywhere along the coast, east coast, west coast, anywhere in Florida, and you put down a great big well, you are very likely before long going to have a little bit of salt water in it. And the more you pump and the more time goes by, the more salt water you're going to get, because we're drying up the water here on the land and underneath the land and in the aquifer, and the salt water is intruding from the coastline. You think about, do you know where Salt Springs is in the Ocala National Forest?
I've been to the forest there, but I'm not sure if I've been to the aquifer.
There's a place there just northeast of Ocala called Salt Springs, and it's in the Ocala National Forest. And the spring is actually producing and always has salt water. It's the most amazing thing. It's a lot of fresh water in it, but it also has salt in it. And I tell people, you know, that can happen with any spring in Florida. If we keep pumping for all these big farms, keep putting down their great big, their huge irrigation wells, and we keep watering and watering and watering all these crops here in North Florida that, you know, we used to grow without having to have irrigation. But nowadays, you just about have to have irrigation to grow it because you can't grow it because sometimes everything gets so dry, we have such a drought that it won't grow, say corn or soybeans or peanuts or something like that. But if you think about it, if we keep doing that, eventually we're going to have saltwater intrusion even further in the state, not just a mile inland from the coastline. A lot of these developments that have been put in along the coast, when they put down a great big huge well to supply those developments, they are going to have to treat that water to pull the salt out of it.
What do you think?
I think that that's is a problem that most people don't know about yet, and I think it's a problem that's coming.
Yeah. What do you think is going on with the sinkhole problem?
Related to it? It's hydraulics. It's just hydraulics, Anita. When you have a high water table, you've got a lot of pressure, and that keeps the ground in Florida stable. When the water table is lowered through a drought or through using too much water, that lime rock in Florida, you see what we've got here? Right here where we live, we have a layer of sand, a layer of rock, and then we have water underneath us.
Right.
So we are very, very subject to sinkholes here. We have an unconfined aquifer right here, but most parts of Florida have lime rock caverns underneath them. You'll have a layer of sand, a layer of rock, and then you'll have water that's coursing through under the ground in caverns, great big huge caverns. And when the water table goes down, that pressure is lessened on the lime rock, and it will fall in, and that becomes a sinkhole. There's two kinds of sinkholes. There's the solution sinkhole that took many, many thousands of years for it to form. It just sort of dribbled down and worked its way down to the aquifer. And then you have the collapse sinkholes, the ones that we hear so much about now, where people's houses are falling into them, or the highways falling into them. And it's hydraulics is what it is. When we lower the water table, we get sinkholes in. It makes the ground less able to hold up. It weakens it.
We had
just
one
change
year
in the water, in the water level.
We had one year here in Tampa where, I guess, out in Plant City Way, towards that direction, which is a rural part of Hillsborough County.
Mm-hmm, where they have great big irrigation wells that water the strawberries.
Yeah, you'd have
mm-hmm.
like the strawberry farmers, and you'd have some residential homes, and then more strawberry farmers and residential homes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody was getting sinkholes. I can't remember how many hundreds of sinkholes there were that winter.
Oh, there were lots of them. I remember reading about it and hearing about it. And that was during a time of drought. So what happened was when they pump more water out of the ground, it makes that lime rock underneath the ground in those caverns, it makes it weaker and weaker, and then you get sinkholes because of that.
And then some of the residential places were actually flooded, if you can believe that. You know, the residential homes that were sandwiched in between the farms ended up going in there, looking in their backyard, and they're, like, totally flooded. So it was just completely bizarre stuff going on with the water. I mean, the last big case of a sinkhole, there's always one or two reported on the news, it seems like, you know, at least every week. But the weird one that happened in Tampa was where that whole man's bedroom went in.
I know. That was awful, wasn't it? That was terrible.
Yeah.
A poor innocent fellow, minding his own business, and a sinkhole forms and swallows him up, and they couldn't get him out. Gone.
And I think they got the brother out. The brother went in after him,
and
they ended up having to pull him out.
It's scary, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah.
It's all from our use of water, misuse of water.
This was one of the big issues why we moved out, one of the reasons why we moved out here. We didn't want to be near the hurricanes on the coast, on the water. And this, we live on the spine of Florida, which is you know, we're very close to the highest ground here in Florida.
Yeah.
So I feel much safer. I have a degree of safety being out here. and I'm in a very rural area, too, and that, you know.
That's wonderful. Very good.
We have
very good. And you've got some great environmentalists that live around you down there.
Yeah. We have some postal workers that live across the street. We have two policemen that live next door. We have a veteran on the other side. So it's kind of like, okay, I feel safe. I feel very snugly being here.
Yes.
And I didn't have
But when a hurricane is coming, pay attention. And when you know it's going to come towards you, the best thing to do is to leave. Take your things that you don't want to lose, your pictures, your family pictures, and your jewelry, and whatever it is that's valuable to you, and take it and go and get out of the path of that storm. Because they're getting worse and worse. And we've been really lucky the past few years to not have one.
Yeah, they have been getting worse and worse. I've noticed that. And even the thunderstorms have been getting worse. Chaotic.
It seems like it rains harder now than it did for a few years.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid how hard it rained, but then there was many years that it didn't seem to rain as hard as it does here lately.
And
I think that's all a part of it, too.
Yeah, the storms also generate more, I think, we're getting more like tornado warnings.
The Midwest and out west, they've had a terrible series of bad tornadoes here the past few years. I was in Norman, Oklahoma not too long ago, and I was there about 10 years ago after they had a tornado, and was out there again after they've had this last one, and it's just total devastation. It is just so terrible. People lose everything. It's a wonder more people didn't die in that last one, really.
What do you say to the climate change deniers now?
Well, did you see that picture of the sculpture in Berlin that's supposed to be the politicians discussing global warming?
Yeah, if
climate change.
You can go to Joy's Facebook page, and you can. She made it her cover photo. It was done by a German, I think. Let me see if I can get the information from you. Page, but it was a German sculpture, and when you look at it, it's just the top shoulders and heads of these politicians, but they're submerged in water.
Yeah, the little short ones like me and you are already underwater.
Yeah, little short ones,
yeah.
You can see the tops of their heads. Oh, God. And it says this sculpture is in Berlin. It's by Isaac Cordal. CORDAL is called Politicians Discussing Global Warming. And I remember posting that, I think it was either earlier today or the day before, and I said, is this what it's going to take?
Isn't that something? That sort of tells it all, doesn't it? That is very graphic and very honest and very, that sort of took my breath away the first time I saw it.
It's brutally honest. Brutally
honest.
Yes,
it is. And I think that's what we have to be. You know, I used to try to mince my words and say things so as not so much to hurt people's feelings, but the older I get, the more...
You know what? I don't give a damn. That's kind of like, you know, somebody says, well, you know, you need to learn how to play nice and maybe, you know, restructure what you're saying so it comes out nicer. Hell no. I ain't doing that.
Well, I try to say it as nice as I can so as not to hurt their feelings and to not insult their intelligence. But at the same time, there's something to be said for total honesty.
Yeah.
When you're totally honest with someone, then you don't have to worry about going back and correcting something that you might have given them the wrong idea a little bit later on.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's best to be honest with people and just tell them just like it is and say, you know, I'm sorry, but that's the way it is, and if I can help you understand it in any way, all you have to do is ask me questions, and I'll try to.
Yeah.
I'll try to help you understand it. Not that I know everything, because I sure don't know everything. I learn something new every day, several new things every day, usually. But you and I both have a lot of experience in dealing with all these different environmental problems, and some of the younger people I find really put a lot of store in the things that we say, and I appreciate that, you know, that they do listen.
And I
hope that we can educate younger people and get them to understand why things are the way they are and what they can do. It's not totally hopeless. I hate to tell young people that it's hopeless. If I were 20 years old, I sure would think twice about having children now. Because I think they're going to come up in a world that's just not nearly going to be as pleasant and as good and as clean as it was when we were coming up.
They're inheriting a huge mess from us. And
they sure are, and it's our fault.
When
I was in high school, Anita, my class, you know, when you graduate, we had a class saying in our yearbook that said something like this world is in such a mess, and it's the fault of the generation before ours, and it's going to have to be cleaned up by the generation after ours. And I'm amazed right now that I realized at 17 years old that my generation was not going to solve the problems of the world, and we were going to have to turn it over to the people coming behind us to solve them. I've tried. I've certainly tried, and I'm not done yet.
But the
younger generation is going to have to kind of step up to the plate here, and they're going to have to come along and learn a lot and do things. And I'm always inspired by young people. When I talk to young people and I tell them some of the things I've done, some of the antics I've pulled just to make a point, you know, they always appreciate that kind of thing. But it really, what I've tried to do is pretty serious and try to educate people so that we can get the good things done that we need to do. And Lord knows there's plenty to do. We'll never run out of a job. Think about it that way.
I always, you know, people have asked me, aren't you afraid of going to jail? And, you know, aren't you afraid of saying this or saying that?
No, they don't want us in jail, and they don't want us in court. Court is where we really like to get them. But they don't want to go to court.
And they don't want us to be in a public venue where we can spat off at the mouth.
Exactly. You got it.
And
I'd rather we just sat down and shut up.
Yeah.
But you and I are not going to do that.
No, never. I always say I will never be silenced.
I won't sit down and be quiet. No. The P&G, Procter & Gamble State, the head honcho with their Florida State guy came to see me back in 1991 or 92, and he wanted to have a meeting with me, so I invited him to my house, and he came and he sat down and he said, how much is it going to take to shut you up? And I said, are you kidding me? I said, neither you nor Edwin Arts, who's the CEO, nor the board of directors of Procter & Gamble have enough money to shut me up. It ain't going to happen, bud. No, I'm not going to do that. You don't have enough money to shut me up. I said, you're going to have to do things the right way. You're going to eventually have to clean this mess up that you've made here. And I know you don't want to, but you're going to have to. And I said, I'll be here long after you're gone. I said, you won't be here all that many years. You'll be leaving here. They'll move you someplace else. I said, but I'm still going to be here. I'm going to live to be an old, mean old lady.
And what did he say when you said that?
he didn't have a whole lot to say after that. I told him, I said, I was really glad that he called and wanted to meet with me because I figured that's the only time he's ever going to want to talk to me, that he probably wouldn't ever want to hear from me again after I got to tell him what I had to say. And I wouldn't let him talk. I talked for about 30 minutes and didn't let him say anything, and he sat there and he was just very hurt because apparently he was used to controlling the conversation, and I just wouldn't let him do it. I said, no, if you call me, you want to talk to me, you want to hear what I got to say, so you're going to listen now.
Yeah.
And when I get through, you can say what you want to say.
He was probably used to having people, you know, be bought for a price, too.
Exactly.
So,
it was,
you know,
that was really obvious. That was very obvious. And when I told him that he didn't have enough money to shut me up, he was quite shocked, I believe.
You know, there's a cartoon on my page right now. It's hilarious. It reminds me of what you just said, and basically basically of our tenacity. But it's a woman in a confessional, an old lady with her purse, and she's praying in the confessional, and she says, she's having her confession done. Bless me, Father, uh-huh. for I have sinned. Last night I killed a congressman. And the priest is on the other side, and he says, my daughter, I'm here to listen to your sins, not to your community service work. And I thought, oh, I like that. I posted that on my page. I thought it was
really I like cute. That. That's good. Very good.
But I thought this is the old women. We are the mother energy. This is the mother energy happening, you know.
That's right. That's exactly right. I've always thought that women would be doing much, much more than the men, and I have, through my experiences, I have always found that to be true. Because we are the mothers. We're the keepers of the earth. Things need more to us, I think, than it does to a lot of men. And men just really don't have the time and the energy to really think about things the way that we do. But they just have a different outlook on life than women do. And it's because we're the mothers and the nurturers, and we're just geared that way. And if all of these environmental problems are much easier to explain to women because they listen a little bit closer than men do, and they pay better attention.
The thing about it is because their
families are involved. That's why.
Yeah, we're looking at how it's going to involve the coming
mm-hmm.
generations, the young people, the children.
Yep.
You know, and men, I don't think they don't think in that construct.
No, most of them don't. Every now and then you'll run across a few that are very good and very, very aware and very caring. And those guys are the ones that we cherish the most. Absolutely.
The ones that are connected to their female side,
yes.
their female energy
yep.
that's within them.
That are not afraid to be connected to their female side. Yes.
Right. So where do we go from here? Are you and I going to be going down to Naples when that...
Well, we just might get arrested together, who knows?
Yeah, because, I'll keep you posted, but I did put you on the group, which is...
Okay.
If anybody's interested in that's listening that wants to hear more updates about that, there's a Facebook group called Stone Crab Alliance.
I saw that. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and I'll try to keep up to date on that.
Now, tell us where people can find you online.
Okay.
And what you've been doing.
They can go to my page, Joy Tolls Ezel, or they can look at the Finn Holloway River. The Finn Holloway River has its own Facebook page. There's also a Facebook page for Floridians Against Incinerators in Disguise. And I try to parcel up the subject matter according to which one of those it seems to go to best. We also have some Yahoo groups. We have a Yahoo group that is the Environmental Alliance of North Florida at Yahoo Groups. And that's kind of a overall umbrella organization over lots of different issues in North and Central Florida. We have a Save Taylor County Residents, which is the one that we started when we were fighting the coal plant. And we have Hope for Clean Water at Yahoo Groups, which is the original group that I started about the Finn Holloway River and our water situation here. So I still operate all those. I also operate the Taylor County News, which is an online newspaper, which has gathered some really interesting articles and such, mostly, how things are, local news here in Taylor County. And I also have one that's called If You Grew Up in Taylor County, You Remember, which is over 2,000 members now.
So I
keep busy with that kind of thing, and I'm still very active in all of the environmental issues that affect Central and North Florida. And I don't intend to quit anytime soon.
We just keep on trying,
Anita. I think that if we can educate one person a day, we'll be doing real good.
What other locations in Florida do you think are hot spots in regards to water?
Right now there's a company that wants to build a gas pipeline through the central part of North Florida, which will go through the Swanee River and the Itchetuckney and the Santa Fe Rivers. It's going to affect all of our rivers up here and probably all of our springs, too. And there's a group that's really working against that, the Aquiferius, Aquiferious, group on Facebook, and you have to ask to be, to join that one. But there is a group of really, really good environmentalists in that group, and we're trying hard to stop that pipeline from coming. There's a group up around Valdosta that's real good, too. The wildgrass activists up there are excellent, and they're trying to stop it, too. We've all gotten to know each other through the years, or at least us older ones have gotten to know each other through years. So all of these issues that come up, and we all try to help each other all across the region. So there's a lot of good people up here in this part of the world that are really good environmentalists, and they really know how to organize and get people together and educate people. And that's what it takes, is it starts in your own community. You have to organize and teach people what the problem is and tell them about it and tell them what they can do. There's always something that we can do, always.
Right.
No matter how bad the situation feels right that moment, there's always something. There's always a letter you can write, or there's always a meeting you can go to, or there's always some elected official you can go and harass for a while and maybe get them to see what's right and what's wrong. And it takes numbers of people. It takes a group of us to get together before we can change things and make it better. And before we can stop these bad ideas from happening.
Yeah, you spoke on the pipeline. What is the name of that pipeline, and is it a natural gas pipeline, or is it?
Yeah, there's a natural gas pipeline. Right this minute, I've forgotten the name of it. It's coming through South Georgia and all through North Florida. If you look on that Aquiferious web Facebook page, you'll see it right away. There's loads of info on there.
Does it go as far south as Orlando, or?
Yes, I think it will. Yep.
Wow.
I think they want to put it on down to South Florida.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
And this is from, this is putting gas from natural gas, and probably Lord knows where else it's coming from. There's no telling. I'm sure you've heard about the people up in Pennsylvania that when they turn on their tap water, they can burn it. And that's from the fracking.
It catches on fire, yep.
Yeah, that's right. Catches on fire. That's a scary thing to think about, isn't it? And we don't need that in Florida. Good God.
Yeah. Well,
we've already got enough problems. We don't need any more.
Yeah, they could put, like you said before, they could put a solar panel on each home, and we would have
exactly. Every house in Florida. You know, way back in the 20s, people in Miami, they had solar water heaters back in the 1920s.
Wow.
And then we kind of got away from that because they thought the nuclear power plants were the answer and the coal-fired power plants were the answer. Everything was the answer except solar. They thought that was an old, out-of-date kind of a blip back then. But that really is the answer for us in Florida. If we could put solar panels on all the homes and generate our own electricity, or heat our own water with solar, wow, just think how many less power plants we'd have to have. We wouldn't have to have nuclear plants. We wouldn't have to have coal-fired power plants.
Right.
We could charge up our electric cars. Yeah.
Well,
a good idea. We could get rid of those gas pipelines and some of those gas stations.
Speaking of cars, there was a show on the Discovery Channel not too long ago, and it was people that were roughing it that were actually put in an area, and I can't remember the name of the show, but, they had to survive with the items that were there around them.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like it was just like a survivalist type show.
They took
scrap metal, they put together a vehicle, and they put a solar panel on it. And the car itself probably cost them less than $50. They made the solar panel, put the solar panel on it, and drove it for 50 miles.
Wow, I would like to see that. It was on the Discovery Channel. Maybe I can look that up.
Yeah.
Great.
I would definitely try. I mean, I'll try to find it, and if I can find it, I'll post the link to you. And if you find it, post the link to me. But, it, you know, when they keep telling us that you can't do this with solar, you can't do that with solar, you know, they're lying.
They don't want to make the change. These power companies really love their profits, really, really love their profits, and they don't want to give up $1 of them.
Right.
And they're going to have to come into this, you know, come into this century, and they're going to have to realize that they can't. We're not going to let them have nuclear, and we're not going to let them build any more coal-fired power plants. No, they can't have that. No. So that is what's going to happen. And we each could have a wind turbine at our place, at our homes, and produce power with the wind. Just above our homes, there's wind blowing all the time, just a little bit above us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know why we're not doing that. It's because the power companies don't want us to. That's why.
Yeah, they
we're going to have to walk around them, and we're going to have to make them let us have them.
Right.
Yeah, and the way we do that is by organizing and educating each other. That's it. And sticking together. Filing the lawsuits, all that has to come. We all have to do all that.
Right.
It's just a process, and it has to be done everywhere. No matter what situation it is, there's a pattern that we have to follow in getting these things done.
So what do you see yourself doing in 5 years? Where do you think you're going to be at in regards to, are you going to still be doing this? Are you going to be retiring and sitting in a rocking chair knitting?
No way. I think if you get in that rocking chair, you don't get back up again, so I'm not getting in it.
That's a good idea.
I'm going to have to keep moving so they don't catch me and put me in a nursing home.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, I think I'll be doing the same thing. So I think I'll be working right on. I'll be, you know, whatever situation, whatever bad idea comes along, I'm going to be working with others to try to stop it and try to bring some intelligence and vision into things and try to make the future better. I'm 66 years old now, so I know I'm not going to live forever. I had a heart attack about 5 years ago, but I'm doing very well. And, you know, I'm getting along real good as far as I can tell. And I probably won't retire from my job because I love my work so much. I love my customers. And with my job, I can kind of make my own schedule. I do a lot of trade shows, so that's the only thing that I don't have much control over, the dates or the times or where I'm going to have to be. But other than that, I get to go pretty much where I want to go. I work 30 states. I work the whole eastern United States, so I get to travel a lot, and I really enjoy it. So I don't think I'm going to retire anytime soon. Plus, I need the health insurance.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And I'm just going
to I guess when I get too old to do it, I'll stop doing it.
I'm 58, actually 58 in a couple of weeks now, and I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
I think it keeps us young and it keeps us active and it keeps our minds working, so we don't need to stop anytime soon, I don't think. And we have a lot to offer people, I believe. I believe that we have a lot of information stored in our heads, and we need to share that information.
Yeah,
and the knowledge that we've gained through all these struggles that we've been through.
I've kind of become the connector. It's usually when I meet somebody, I can kind of suss them out and what they're passionate about, and I can connect them with other people that are doing the same things.
And I do that a lot too. You know, when there's a bad issue comes up, I pretty much know who's going to be the good active people to help out. And I try to connect people so that people that do have problems, I can help them with. There's a young man over in Middleburg who got in touch with me because he saw some postings that I did back during the coal plant fight up here back in 2005 and 6, because JEA over there had put this product called Easy Base, which is a road building product that they make out of coal ash, so you know it can't be exactly clean, right? But they told him it was safe as sand, and they brought him 1,000 loads of it to put on his property, to build roads on his property. And then one day the DEP guy showed up on his front doorsteps and said, sir, you might want to keep your chickens from picking that stuff right there, and you probably don't want to let your little girl play around it. It's pretty toxic, and we're going to have to send somebody out here to clean all this up. It's a mess. And he said, well, your other guy told me that it was, your JEA guy told me that it was safe as sand. He said, well, they might have told you that, but that's not exactly the way it is. So he got in touch with me, and I've put him in touch with other people that have helped him over the last 4 or 5 years. And I see that as kind of the thing that we can do to really help people, is to put them in touch with people that can help them. And so that's what I try to do. And I've really tried to help this young man in a lot of ways, and he's doing really good. He's become an activist. He's running for county commission over there. Had him on the radio this afternoon in Jacksonville. Had him talking about the problems over there with the Easy Base. And if down there or around in your area, if they want to build roads using something that might be called Easy Base or something similar made out of coal ash, don't let them do it. It's very highly toxic, and it leaches into your groundwater and into the streams all around.
Oh, my God.
Bad idea. Bad idea. All these companies are looking for a way to get rid of their waste. They're toxic waste.
Right.
Don't let them get away with it.
They don't want to spend the money to dispose of it properly.
And they really don't want to worry about how they shouldn't create it in the first place.
Right.
That's really what they don't want to talk about. Okay.
Well, I don't, you know, it's just crazy. It's gone crazy, totally crazy in regards to how Florida has just become a toxic waste dump.
It's
happening everywhere,
yep.
And it's happening everywhere.
But we did stop them from building any more coal plants, and we are stopping the new nuclear power plant. So we're making some progress. I can see that.
That Levy thing was a big thing we did.
Well, no kidding. I was really worried. When we first started meeting about that, I was thinking, I don't know how this is going to be. The only thing I think that's going to save us is the fact that it's going to cost so daggone much money that the power company's not going to want to do it on their own. They're going to want the taxpayers to pay for it and their customers to pay for it. And sure enough, that's pretty much the way it turned out, even though people are still paying for the doggone thing, even though it's not going to be built. Amazing.
And they're not, they've been trying to fight this, but
yep.
There's not enough people fighting it. They're just...
I know, more people need to get involved in that and say, wait a minute, we're not paying for that. You know, you could write a letter to the Public Service Commission and tell them. Say, what is wrong up there in Tallahassee? Write to your legislator, write to your senator and your representative and say, come on, get on the right side of this. You shouldn't expect us to pay for these things. No.
The
power companies make enough money that if they wanted to, and if they wanted something like that, they should have to pay for it themselves. And when you start talking like that, they'll drop that right quick because they want everybody else to pay for it.
They should just boycott. If everybody that pays electric just said, okay, we don't want to be charged these extra charges. They've already charged us this money every month for the past 4 or 5 years. You know, we're just going to not pay this bill on this particular date or this particular month. Nobody's going to pay their bill. That would drive that company to their knees. They would have to do something.
If everybody would do it, it would.
Yeah.
It would make a great point, wouldn't it? It would also get the attention of your legislator who's taking money by the suitcase fulls from the power companies.
Right.
Tell him you know about that. Uh-huh. Say, hey, I know how much money you're getting from them. Stop doing it. Pay attention to us instead of them.
I always tell people, if you want to know who's taking what money from whom, go to opensecrets.org. That's the only public website, you know, it's supposed to be public what our leaders, our elected leaders take. And if you go to opensecrets.org, it's all there. All you have to do is put their name in. You can find out who contributed to their campaign and how much and what companies were involved.
Follow the money. That's always the way. That's it.
And you can call them on it. You can go to a public hearing, and if your issue is fracking and they've taken money from a particular company that's come in and is getting ready to do fracking, I'm just using that as a hypothetical, then you can say, hey, I know you, Congressman so-and-so, took X amount of dollars from this company, and now you've allowed them in, and they're gonna frack our neighborhoods.
That's right.
This was.
I don't want to hear you say that, but the truth is the truth, and the truth hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, the well, this well down in Naples is being put 1,000 feet from a residence. 1,000 feet.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That's just nuts.
A fifth of a mile, not very far.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
And all the trucks and all of the transport and everything is going down rural roads that are not going to be able to accommodate these huge trucks. And on these same roads are bus stops.
Yes.
Where the bus goes to pick up children.
This can't be anything but a disaster. That's the only thing that can happen there.
It's a disaster. And they have
a disaster.
Yeah, they haven't guaranteed that they're not going to open flare and all of this other stuff. So we're talking about groundwater.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about the Everglades. We're talking about right contiguous to the Panther, Wild Florida Panther Refuge.
Think about how vulnerable the water table is there.
Yeah, and the other thing is the billions of dollars that are being spent out of taxpayers' money to restore the Everglades, yet our leaders are going to allow it to be fracked.
That's just amazing. I just can't believe they're going to do that.
I can't wrap my head around it. It doesn't make
any... It's just beyond belief that anybody would fall for that, that would let an oil company or a gas company get away with that. Oh, and here just in the last couple of days that BP now has new leases in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, they just bought it. I can't let me pull that up because that's on my page, actually. It was into the millions. Down. I'm just scrolling.
Yeah, they bid on the leases and got a bunch of them, yeah. Well, and one very close to the horizon where they made the terrible disaster a couple of years ago. Jeez.
BP pays $41.6 million for new Gulf of Mexico drilling leases, including track near spill site. BP was the only bidder on a tract a few miles west of that one, getting it for $1.2 million. The company was...
Now, see, $41 million sounds like a lot of money to us, but to them, that's pocket change.
Pocket change, yep. And it says the company was suspended from new federal business after pleading guilty in November 2012 to criminal charges.
Amazing. They plead guilty and they get to do it again.
Yeah. The suspension was lifted Friday and BP bid a total of $53.8 million on 31 tracks Wednesday with high bids on 24.
Well, this is one girl that's not put BP gasoline in her car since that happened.
Well, I have never been to a BP since that happened.
Me either.
And I
not going to. Nope. They can forget it. I'm done with them.
Yeah, we're getting to the end of our show.
Oh, already?
As far as time goes, we've been just having a huge gab fest here, and I think you and I have solved the problems of Florida.
Just between us, just the two of us. If they'd only listen to us.
Yeah, that's right. So we have to.
If you'll run for governor, I'll be your campaign manager.
I think you should run for governor.
Oh no, they don't want me up there.
One of us could be governor and one of us could be lieutenant governor, but, we have to make sure we keep a lieutenant governor in her office.
That's right. Boy, wouldn't that be nice?
We can't let her go out and do illegal things.
Boy, the ones that we've had have been what a trip. No kidding.
Yeah, well, that's why.
What a mess. No kidding. What a mess. How can people have voted for that crazy guy?
I don't know. People look at our news and they just shake their heads. People from all
over. Oh, I know. I have friends from New Jersey. That's another story. And friends from Oklahoma and Texas, and they say, there's no place like Florida, is there? And I say, no, sure isn't.
Joy, I want to thank you for being on the show. And
well, thank you, Anita. It's been a treasure, just as always, talking to you. Always enjoy talking to you.
And we will come up with a strategy of getting up to Tallahassee and getting in that Capitol building. So
let's do it. Let's do it. I'll be right there with you.
Yeah, that could happen. I mean, the Dream Defenders, by the way, have done some marvelous work, and there's some young people that are really shaking things up in Tally, and I really when you spoke of young children before, young kids, they're not young children. I shouldn't call them that. They'd be insulted, but they're just amazing. And
they're a lot younger than we are, and they've got a lot of energy, and I really appreciate that nowadays.
I urge people to check them out and read about what they're doing. But I will definitely, we'll definitely do another show with any updates. And, of course, I'll keep you updated on what's happening.
And I may see you down in Naples. And then we might get arrested together. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Whatever it's going to take. We got to stop those trucks from rolling. And you know what? Everywhere else where fracking has happened and there's been major resistance, the women, the over 50 women have been there.
That's us, sweetie.
Yep, and I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to do what it's...
How are they going to be mean to a grandmother? They can't be mean to a grandmother.
Well, they'll try. They'll try.
Well, we can shake our fingers in their faces and say, you listen to me now. And we can get away with a lot of things that we couldn't get away with when we were younger.
It gives us a certain... Well, people give you a certain amount of respect, you know.
That's right. Well, if they're any kind of person at all, they will.
All right, sweetie. You have a great
You too, and thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your radio program. Thank you.
And make sure you spread it around, and we'll talk again soon. And to all of the listeners out there, thank you for joining us on this show. And I did just check the Facebook group out, Aquafurious. Definitely check that out on Facebook. It's got a lot of the water issues that you want to read about are right on there. People are posting there. So. Okay,
That's
Joy,
right.
Have a great night.
All right. Thank you, Anita. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's the interview, a great interview with Joy Tolles-Izell, a water and land use warrior, environmental activist, and really just is very, very well informed about what's happening throughout Florida. I do want to just remind you to check out our show next week. I will be posting very soon who we'll have as a guest, and check us out on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com for any information about the show or to get in touch with me and suggest future guests for our show. I'm going to close right now with a wonderful song by Laura Veers. She's an incredible artist that really doesn't get a lot of airplay out this way. She's from Portland, Oregon. And this is her song, Drink Deep. And you all have a great weekend. Make sure whatever you do, you're celebrating peace, as this weekend is the 11th anniversary of our invasion in Iraq. And celebrate World Water Day, which is tomorrow, March 22nd. So have a great weekend. And here's Laura Veers, Drink Deep.